Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What we found there was that half of the population are starving. The grim reality is also that 9 out of 10 people are not eating enough, are not eating every day, and don't know where the next meal is going to come from.
As the death toll in Gaza grows closer to 20,000, Human Rights Watch has accused the Israeli government of using starvation as a weapon of war in Gaza. We'll speak to Omar Shakir, the Israel and Palestine director of Human Rights Watch in Amman. Then we look at how the Biden administration's facing accusations it's been too slow to help Palestinian Americans and their families trapped in Gaza. We'll speak with a Palestinian American woman in Detroit whose mother died while waiting to leave Gaza for medical care. We'll also talk to the head of Gaza's General Union of Cultural Centers. He left Gaza a month ago, is now desperately trying to get his family out and to the United States. This comes as calls grow for the U.S. to grant temporary protected status, or TPS, to Palestinians already in the U.S. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. At least 13 Palestinians have been killed and 75 wounded in an Israeli strike on the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. Today's deadly assault came after at least 110 Palestinians were reportedly killed in and around Jabalia since Sunday. Meanwhile, in the southern city of Rafah, at least 29 people were killed, with many more trapped under the rubble after Israel's military bombed 3 residential buildings. With the latest attacks, the number of Palestinians killed since October 7th is rapidly approaching 20,000. On Monday, Israeli officials allowed a few dozen trucks carrying desperately needed humanitarian aid through the Kerem Shalom border crossing from Israel into Gaza. It was the first time since early October Israel allowed aid in through the crossing, adding to a trickle of aid Israel's military has allowed through Gaza's border with Egypt. Truck drivers said the aid convoy was a tiny fraction of what's needed.
The aid coming through is not enough. It doesn't come in every day, and time is short. Trucks wait 17 to 18 days at the crossing. We hope that the world would allow for the aid to reach these poor people. Those living in the displaced camps are in a bad situation. They have no life.
After headlines, we'll speak with the Israel-Palestine director at Human Rights Watch, which has just published a report headlined Israel, Starvation Used as Weapon of War in Gaza. Israeli strikes on Gaza have killed 3 more Palestinian journalists. Adel Zarob was killed as Israel bombed Rafah City overnight. He was reportedly known for his efforts to help wounded children. His death came a few hours after Abdullah Alwan was killed in an Israeli airstrike on his home in Jabalia, northern Gaza. He was a commentator for a number of Al Jazeera Arabic programs. A third journalist, Hanin Al-Kashtan, was also killed in an Israeli strike on the Nuseirat refugee camp, along with her family. At least 97 Palestinian journalists and media workers have been killed by Israel since the October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has reaffirmed the Biden administration's support for Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip, calling U.S.-Israeli ties unshakable. Austin made the remarks in Tel Aviv Monday, where he met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's defense minister Yoav Gallant, and other members of Israel's war cabinet. Their meeting came as Houthi fighters in Yemen launched drone attacks on 2 cargo vessels in the Red Sea, the latest in a series of assaults that Austin blamed on Iran.
America's commitment to Israel is unwavering, and no individual, group, or state should test our resolve. Iran's support for Houthi attacks on commercial vessels must stop. Now, we'll continue to provide Israel with the equipment that you need to defend your country, Mr. Prime Minister, including critical munitions, tactical vehicles, and air defense systems.
The United Nations Security Council postponed a vote Monday on a Gaza ceasefire resolution after U.S. diplomats objected to language calling for the, quote, urgent and sustainable cessation of hostilities, unquote. The U.S. delegation is demanding the language be changed to a suspension of hostilities. The Security Council's plan to vote on a resolution reflecting the watered-down language today. The U.S. previously vetoed a resolution calling for a humanitarian pause on October 18th and another calling for an urgent humanitarian ceasefire on December 9th. In Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott has signed a bill into law allowing local law enforcement to arrest immigrants and asylum seekers and charge them with a state crime for crossing the U.S.-Mexico border outside ports of entry. The new crime would be punishable by up to 6 months in jail, while Texas judges would have the authority to drop the charges if a migrant agrees to be returned to Mexico. Governor Abbott spoke from a section of border wall in the Rio Grande Valley Monday, where he also signed two other bills for further militarizing the U.S.-Mexico border.
The goal of Senate Bill 4 is to stop the tidal wave of illegal entry into Texas. It creates a criminal offense for illegal entry into Texas from a foreign nation. Senate Bill 3 adds $1.54 billion more to build more border barriers and walls like what we have here. It includes also $40 million for the Texas Department of Public Safety for border security operations and increased law enforcement presence.
Texas Democrats and members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus are urging the Justice Department to block Senate Bill 4. On Monday, they wrote in a letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland, quote, "This bill is set to be the most extreme anti-immigrant state bill in the United States. It's clearly preempted by federal law, and when it goes into effect, will likely result in racial profiling, significant due process violations, and unlawful arrests of citizens, lawful permanent residents, and others," they wrote. On Saturday, the White House hosted an online meeting with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus after members warned President Biden against agreeing to Republican demands to further crack down on immigrants and asylum seekers as part of a military aid package for Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel. Egypt's authoritarian president, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, has declared victory after a non-competitive election. Human Rights Watch reports this month's poll followed a campaign of arrests, intimidation, and onerous requirements for candidates that effectively prevented any meaningful competition. In 2019, Egypt's constitution was amended to allow Sisi to run for a third term while lengthening presidential terms to 6 years. He's now set to remain in office until 2030. Sisi came to power in 2013 when he led the coup that removed Egypt's first democratically elected president, Mohamed Morsi, opening a crackdown in dissent that's been described as the end of the Arab Spring. In September, the Biden administration approved $1.3 billion in military aid to Egypt, withholding just a small fraction of the aid, $85 million, even though the aid was contingent on Sisi's government releasing some of Egypt's tens of thousands of political prisoners, which it failed to do. Pope Francis has formally approved a document from the Vatican's Doctrinal Office that for the first time allows priests to bless same-sex couples, so long as the blessing does not resemble a wedding. Advocates hailed the move as a major step toward ending the Catholic Church's discrimination toward LGBTQ+ people, but warned the Church still holds the official position that marriage is between a man and a woman and that same-sex couples are living in sin. Marianne Duddy Burke is director of Dignity USA, which focuses on LGBTQ+ rights and the Catholic Church.
Obviously, for same-sex couples, sacramental equality is what would put us on the same footing as any other Catholic seeking recognition of their relationships. We're not there yet. This is an important step, but it is yet another step on a journey that still has probably miles and miles to go.
In China, at least 118 people have died after a 6.2 magnitude earthquake struck a mountainous region of the northwestern Gansu province. More than 500 people were injured as the quake collapsed buildings and severed roads and power lines. Rescue workers say freezing temperatures and rough terrain are hampering efforts to find survivors. Here in the United States, the Environmental Protection Agency has launched a formal safety review of various chemicals, including vinyl chloride, one of the substances released into the air in eastern Ohio after a Norfolk Southern train derailed and triggered a massive fire earlier this year. Vinyl chloride's been linked to heightened cancer risk. It can be found in commonly used plastic products and polyvinyl chloride plastic, or PVC. Following the February crash in East Palestine, Ohio, residents reported respiratory and other health problems. The incident brought scrutiny to so-called bomb trains that transport crude oil and other dangerous chemicals through communities across the United States. The EPA review will take at least 3 years. Here in New York, the judge overseeing Donald Trump's civil fraud trials rejected his request to have the case against Trump thrown out. On Monday, Judge Arthur Engoron Plasted, an expert witness called by the defense, noting that New York University accounting professor Eli Bartoff spent 650 hours on the case at a rate of $1,350 per hour. The judge ruled that Bartoff had lost all credibility, writing, quote, "All that his testimony proves is that for $1 million or so, some experts will say whatever you want them to say," unquote. In Georgia, the former election workers, African Americans Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss, have sued Trump's former attorney Rudy Giuliani for a second time. On Friday, a federal jury ordered Giuliani to pay Freeman and Moss $148 million in damages after he falsely accused them of tampering with ballots during the 2020 election, leading to harassment and death threats from Trump's supporters against them. Their new lawsuit seeks a court order permanently barring Giuliani from defaming them again. Meanwhile, a federal appeals court panel has rejected a bid by Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, to have an election interference case against him in Georgia moved to federal court. And the famed Italian Marxist and political activist Antonio Negri has died at the age of 90. Negri inspired generations of leftist scholars and activists with his writings about the human desire for liberation and the self-organizational capacity of ordinary people to make change. Negri co-authored, along with Michael Hart, the seminal book Empire, which argued for a contemporary understanding of imperialism beyond the limits of individual nation states. Democracy Now! Interviewed Antonio Negri in Venice, Italy, in 2015. I concluded our conversation by asking Negri what gives him hope.
Let me just be honest.
The fact that the new generations, and not only them, have understood that they can fight, that they can move on the terrain of new capacities for action. I believe that these new generations born out of communicative and intellectual labor are much freer than our parents or my generation of factory workers. These are social generations, generations who communicate and build their future with language, with the word, with intelligence, and this is hope. Hope lies wholly within people and their ability to determine their own destinies.
We'll be posting the whole interview later in the week. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, we go to Amman, Jordan, to talk about the Human Rights Watch report on Israel using starvation as a weapon of war. We will also be talking to Palestinians and Palestinian Americans who are accusing the Biden administration it's been too slow to help them and their families trapped in Gaza. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Security by Clarissa Bitar. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. As the humanitarian crisis in Gaza deepens, we turn now to Palestinians and Palestinian Americans who are trying to evacuate their family members to the United States. At least two Palestinian Americans have now filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration, saying its failure to help them violates their constitutional rights. This is Yasmina Laga, who says she lost at least 100 relatives in Gaza, including two American citizens.
The only thing that I'm being told is that there is nothing further that the U.S. government can do, which I don't believe at all.
The lawsuit notes that after the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel, the U.S. government organized charter flights from Tel Aviv for Americans to leave Israel. So far, they say, the United States has not organized any flights to secure the exit of at least 900 U.S. citizens, residents, and family members still in Gaza. Al Jazeera reports more than 100 staff members at the Department of Homeland Security signed an open letter to Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas denouncing the response to humanitarian crisis in Gaza so far, saying it should be, quote, commensurate with the past responses to humanitarian tragedies and offer a humanitarian parole program to Palestinians like it did after conflicts in Afghanistan and Ukraine. More than 100 Democrats, led by Michigan Senator Dick Durbin, have called on Biden to make Palestinians who are already in the U.S. eligible for temporary protected status, or TPS. Today, we'll hear two stories. One, a Palestinian-American woman in Detroit whose mother died in Gaza. She was approved to evacuate, but was still waiting to get out. The daughter is desperately seeking the government's help to evacuate the rest of her family. We'll also be joined by her attorney, Sophia Akbar. But first, we go to Cairo, Egypt, with another of Sophia's clients, Fadi Abu Shamala. He's Just Vision's outreach associate in Gaza, executive director of Gaza's General Union of Cultural Centers. We spoke to him last month when he was still in Gaza about his New York Times op-ed, "What More Must the Children of Gaza Suffer?" Well, he was able to leave Gaza and is joining us now as he works to be reunited with his wife and his three children who are still in Gaza, Ali, Karam, and Adam. Fadi, welcome back to Democracy Now! In a moment, we're going to talk about the legal case here. But if you can talk about what is happening in Gaza right now, what's happening in Rafah, in Jabalia, talk about why you left Gaza and what you think needs to happen.
Oh, thank you so much for having me for the second time. I wouldn't do the same for me. But yeah, again, thank you so much for having me in this interview. I will start by telling that the situation on the ground, in, not in Rafah city itself, like in every city in Gaza Strip, is beyond our imagination. Like, the not all of the news really come out to us here. I'm talking with you from Cairo, and the situation on the ground itself, it's more horrible than what you can see by your screens and TVs. I would say also a horrific number. Like, the UNRWA say that 1.9 million of the Palestinian people are displaced, already displaced their homes. They, all most of them are, were pushed into the far south of Gaza Strip in a city called Rafah. In the last 36 hours, only 177 Palestinian civilians were killed. This war, I would call it, is the war against the Palestinian civilian. In order only to kill, that's it. This is the main goal. I would say that there's two goals. The first one is to kill the civilian as much as they can, and the second goal is to destroy as much as they can. Gaza City itself is erased. You will be shocked when you, if you will send your cameras after hopefully this nightmare and this war will end. You will be shocked because of the numbers of the neighborhood that it's completely is damaged. The south, the north, sorry, the north of the Gaza Strip, no one knows about the north of Gaza Strip. Only there's two journalists, according to what I know, that there's two journalists who are trying to cover the situation there. Like, they are killing people in tents. That's what I hear also. Like, also, sorry, that witnesses say that the Israeli bulldozers buried the injured people in Kamal Adwan Hospital. They buried them while they are alive. They were still alive. They killed them. They buried them. We should find a word that can express more than the word of genocide. That's what is going on there. Like, the medical situation is horrible. The humanitarian situation is horrible. The water itself, the food itself, the electricity, the number of the killed people, the number of the bombed homes over the head of its residents. At the end, no one knows when this war is going to end. But what I know for sure, that we were all devastated, that our whole heart is broken for the destruction that's happened, the plural destruction that's happening.
Leave Gaza. And also, what is the situation with your wife and your three children? Could you talk about the obstacles of them not being able to get out? Fadi, could you hear me?
Fadi, I'm going to put Juan's question to you. For some reason, you're not able to hear him. He's talking about your family and trying to get your family out. Can you describe?
I don't hear you, sorry.
I think the IFB has dropped, and we're going to go back to you. But we're going to go right now to your lawyer, and we'll try to fix the sound system to Cairo, Sophia Akbar. Sophia, can you talk about the situation that Fadi and a number of other people are in? Talk about what's happening in the United States and how Palestinian Americans in the United States trying to get their families out, and Palestinians who are trying to come into the United States from Gaza. Talk about, with your experience as a civil rights attorney who's been working with other attorneys and advocates to grant TPS to Palestinians here already, and what's happening to, for example, your client, Fadi.
Thank you for having me, Ms. Goodman. My client's family members need immediate evacuation from Gaza to reunite with their families and to escape near certain death due to Israel's brutal war on Palestine. We need the U.S. government to demand an immediate ceasefire from Israel and to stop U.S. taxpayer dollars to facilitate the genocide of the Palestinian people. We need the U.S. government to create immigration pathways for Palestinians to come to the U.S. to escape deadly and inhumane conditions. We know that last week, UNICEF declared Palestine to be the deadliest place for children in the entire world. In just the last 10 weeks, Israel has killed over 10,000 Palestinian children, and that's not including the numbers that are trapped under the rubble, and has injured over 18,000 Palestinian children while they're walking to school, playing outside, receiving medical treatment in hospitals, staying quietly in their homes, or waving a white flag while crawling to them. Both of my clients have children that have been affected by children in their families that have been affected by this war. Fadi has three children, and we just found out this morning that they were able to evacuate from Egypt. But this has been grueling process. I'm sorry?
Able to evacuate to Egypt?
That's correct. They were able to evacuate just this morning. And but prior to this, They were in a refugee camp that was bombed. There were 20 people that died in that bombing. And Fadi was frantically looking through pictures to make sure that his family members were not included in the dead. It has been a grueling process of waiting while Fadi has been separated from his family. And hopefully they will be reuniting in the next few hours. But Fadi still has 20 family members who are in Gaza. And my other client, who we'll hear from as well, Nermeen, she has 20 nephews and nieces under the age of 21 who are in Gaza. And some are in the northern part of Gaza where they rarely hear from them. So regarding efforts to grant temporary protected status, as you mentioned, Senator Durbin and Senator Jayapal wrote letters to the Biden administration demanding that temporary protected status be extended to Palestinians. I am also part of a collective of attorneys and advocates across the country, and we, along with the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, wrote a letter as well to the Biden administration demanding that TPS be extended to Palestinians. And we had over 100 organizational signatories. TPS is typically granted to countries that are undergoing armed conflict or an environmental disaster. In Palestine, there are no more buildings where people can work. There are no more schools for children to attend to allow parents to work and for children to have a future. Even if we have a ceasefire tomorrow, the amount of destruction that Israel has unleashed onto Palestinians in Gaza has made life impossible. So temporary protected status would allow Palestinians who are already here in the United States extended status so that they do not have to return to a death sentence. But TPS is not enough. That only applies to Palestinians who are here. So what we really need is a humanitarian immigration pathway that would allow Palestinians who are in Gaza a pathway to come to the United States and find refuge here.
Sophia, could you talk about the difference between how the administration has been dealing, for instance, with those fleeing the war in Ukraine versus the Palestinians?
Absolutely. That is an extremely stark difference. Under the Uniting for Ukraine program, all requirements of having connections to green card holders and U.S. citizens were waived. So Ukraine, over 270,000 Ukrainians were allowed to come to the United States under this program. And as advocates on the ground right now, serving, you know, our clients who have families in Gaza, we cannot even get U.S. citizens out. Our advocates had to sue the Biden administration just to get U.S. citizens evacuated. And that didn't even prioritize the issue. We had to, my colleagues had to sue, place two more lawsuits last week to evacuate U.S. citizens. And so that's not to say how, you know, the family members of U.S. citizens and the green card holders are treated. And the Uniting for Ukraine program applied to people beyond that category as well. So what we really need is a similar program like Uniting for Ukraine, where Palestinians can have an immigration humanitarian pathway to come here and seek refuge.
And what are the obstacles posed by the fact that the United States does not recognize Palestine as a foreign state and when it comes to immigration issues?
That's absolutely a challenge, and it is something that we had to address in our efforts to request TPS. And we have seen that the United States has offered temporary protected status to territories. So that is something that we included in our letter and in our request. But absolutely, it is a challenge. And, ultimately, without a solution that grants Palestinians freedom, there is no immigration solution that will properly address this problem. Even if we